Thank you and very much welcome to today's conversation. We are very pleased to have you, Barry Clements, on this dialogue today. So, Barry, the global travel and business events ecosystem operates in a deeply interconnected world. And as we see today, we have geopolitical tensions in the Middle East, disruptions in global travel routes, and broader economic uncertainties are once again beginning to test the resilience of the tourism and meetings industry. So, Barry, from where you sit, even as you introduce yourself to us today, we know that you have worked across the global hospitality and tourism sector for many decades, and you advise organizations on strategy and transformation. From your perspective, Barry, how do these global geopolitical crises translate into real disruptions for the travel and meetings industry?
Great. Thanks, Kathy, and always a pleasure to chat to you. We've known each other for some time, and it's really good to tackle these topics that are really important. So for those who don't know, thanks for the short introduction. Barry Clements, I wear quite a couple of different hats, but our main company is called Hospitality EQ, where we do, as you said, advisory consulting services to private sector, public sector, and so on. So really working deep into the industry at all sorts of different levels. So as we've seen once again after COVID, which was a very big learning curve, how global, because effectively this is a global crisis, affects our industry. And there's a couple of different areas. The first and foremost, as we were discussing offline a little bit earlier, is aviation and the disruption of the airspaces. We haven't been talking about the war in Ukraine, but even that has affected things quite a lot. It's been very mute at the moment because of what's happening in the Middle East, I guess. But it's ongoing and it's had some big effects. But routes are coming very costly and lengthy because of the airs that cannot be reached, which is one of the big impacts. Confidence and corporate traveler policy. It's not just about what is happening. It's a whole confidence thing. It's psychological. People do not feel comfortable. Can I travel? Will I travel? Should I travel? Becomes a very big thing. It's not, can I afford to? Will I make that booking? Will it change? What's going on? Corporates will not send their people anymore. There's a lot of different things. And it's media perception as well, which has a spillover of the whole region. When things started, it was between Iran, Israel, and the UAE, oh, sorry, the USA. But now it affects the whole Middle East. But how much does it really affect? Sometimes we think it's further than it really is because of a lot of fake news nowadays. So there's a lot of different things there. So that affects things, how they happen, what people, from a perception type of point as well. Then obviously the currency and cost volatility. Now with the oil prices going crazy, one of the big tactics in this whole war is creating this economic crisis in terms of the fuel, which affects everything because it's your plane trip, the kerosene for the flights, it's the diesel for your trucks that are moving things around. The whole supply chain is affected. And
And I
then another
think
thing we mustn't forget, sorry,
go
one
ahead,
last
Barry.
thing, talent. One of the last things is, the talent. We big hotel groups, they've got people from different countries that are working in the industry and they can't come to work at the moment. That's also one of those things that we might overlook, but it's really a very big thing. But the biggest effect currently is the aviation space, as well as the costs and the whole perception, what this does for the area.
Yeah, and you've mentioned a few of the things that are first impacts. when a crisis like what we have in the Middle East begins to play out, there are certain, the first impacts that have serious, significant ripple effects for destinations, for the airlines, but for event organizers, and even for those that hold event budgets. What might you say from an industry perspective are some of those very first impacts that we begin to feel when, such geopolitical tensions escalate?
So I think one of the first things in terms of specific my industry is that because of the aviation space, now people cannot travel the same way. Those costs are going up. So it becomes economically maybe not viable anymore. People are scared to make plans, so they might not organize that event because they'll have less delegates. Again, if it's not a paid-for event, making it less viable because you're not getting the attendance that you require. And there's a very good chance of people having to move the event to a different region, if this is possible, which is quite challenging most of the time because things are planned years in advance sometimes for bigger events. But the first thing you see, the drop in attendance, the cancellations of events that were planned, and then as well maybe a move of events to different regions. So those are the first things that happen. And obviously no new bookings in that specific region, or even not the direct region, but anything around it, or if you have to travel through.
Mm-hmm. So you interact a lot in your role and in your consulting work, Barry. You interact a lot with leaders, with CEOs, with heads of institutions. What are some of the immediate operational adjustments that leaders are having to make during periods of travel disruption? What are some of the maybe organizational or operational adjustments that a leader has to make?
So there's two or three. Yeah, so the first thing is, you have to protect your cash flow. You make sure you've got the liquidity to continue operating, and you delay non-essential investments while protecting your core operations. I think that's one of the first things that need to happen. You shift your demand strategy, if we're talking about hospitality, from being focused on international travel, you shift towards regional and domestic markets. You make your product available for that, more appealing for those regions. It's something that very clearly came out when COVID happened, right? That's one of the first things that we see, which is still a challenge where we still need a lot of improvement. Some of the other things that we see and that's essential is flexible cancellation policies, rescheduling options, and shorter booking commitments, shorter terms, just making it easier for people to feel secure to at least make the booking, understanding that if something happens, they can either get the money back, they can cancel, they can reschedule, whatever it may be. So those are important. But then also when you speak to the guys, that that you look at your different forecast, what will happen and how do I deal on the best case scenario? Like we said earlier, we thought this might just take a couple of days. It's now moved on. Best case scenario was, it's just going to be a few days. We don't have to worry. But what if this continues for another 2, 3, 4 months? Now is the time, especially now we're in the third week of it, to start looking at, right, guys, this is not just a short-term thing. This is going to last longer. What will we do now? So to have those different scenarios and plan for the different ways and the different things that can happen, it's very important.
And that leads me right straight to my next question, Barry. When we have this kind of global uncertainty, and definitely, as you have put it, will affect travel demand, it will affect investor confidence. What should the leaders in hospitality and tourism be doing to balance these short-term survival techniques with their long-term strategy? Because like you said, nobody has an inkling as to how long is this going to last.
Correct. So as I already said, the first thing is protect your cash flow. Make sure you still got money coming in, and limit your expenses with obviously without disrupting your operations. Stabilize your operation and focus on retaining your core staff. You know, if like with COVID, we had to close down, but a lot of people made sure that they still looked after their team, because as challenging as that is at the time when cash flow is low, the cost of starting again and trying to get people back and retrained, even if it's after a year, is a lot higher than making sure you retain them. But then those are some of the first short-term priorities you need to look at. From a long-term perspective, you have to continue building your brand. You know, you cannot stop. And it especially now becomes more important to maybe slightly diversify and focus on strategic partnerships. Like we spoke about with the airlines very much affected. They need to work with each other, right? Works for all parts of the hospitality industry. So strategic partnerships become more and more important, whether it's between airlines and hotels, whether it's between destination marketing agencies or corporations like tourism boards, things like that, at a regional, continental level. And one thing is important, keep investing in product quality. Because if you keep able, you obviously need to be able to, but if you continue investing during a downturn, like is currently happening, recovery will normally be much faster when the demand returns because of the product quality has continued improving.
Yeah, so we work in this very, very interconnected industry. And to your last point, you just talked about, you know, that coordination within the ecosystem and, you know, collaborating with other parties to ensure that your brand is somewhat insulated, that whereas there may be a slowdown, there is continued growth in marketing. But looking at the impact, you know, it began with the airlines, but now we definitely are seeing the impact on the hotels, on MICE venues. We are seeing direct impact on destinations. Event organizers are, you know, directly impacted. You can see how interconnected our industry is. What would you say is the importance of the ecosystem coordination and collaboration during moments of crisis? And how do we build that collaboration? And perhaps, Barry, we can push it and say, who should take leadership for ecosystem coordination in African markets in moments of crisis?
So obviously, like we say, the industry is very broad. So we've got so many different factors and organizations involved. And you know, we're talking about rerouting and you know, we're traveling from different destinations. Now we cannot travel through the Middle East hub. So we have to go through Europe. So now what do you do? You don't have a visa for the UK or a Schengen visa for Europe to come back to Africa. So this is where the public sector can work closely with the industry as well. Obviously, different airlines working together. We already got your key alliances there working together, but that is, you know, a lot of it is marketing. When we talk about alliances within the industry, airline industry, but this is where they should work a lot closer. When you've got a booking with the one airline, make it possible to shift to another one quite easily without all these extra costs. And then also, we know that these guys have relationships with for immigration and things like that. So make it possible that if I have to now fly through Heathrow for argument's sake and I need a visa, but I'm not even planning to leave the terminal, you know, have that flexibility and adaptability that it's easy to actually make those changes. The reality is in the long run that saves a lot of money, because keeping people in one destination because they can't travel, there's a lot of responsibilities for the airlines quite often. So having those things working together really actually saves money in the long run, I believe. It's a cheaper option than just keeping people pending. Look what Dubai did when this just happened. They say anybody who cannot travel, make sure you give them accommodation and extend the visa at no cost. They'll pick up the bill. A very unique situation, but still, this is where we need to think partnerships and working together. But for future, I think it's also important to do like joint destination marketing. So when something happens in a certain area, it's very easy to shift. You focus on the area. I already spoke about airlines, strategic airline partnerships, very, very important. But then also coordinated recovery strategies. The problem is when there's a crisis, everybody jumps without communication, and having that conversation between different parties. It's very important that the language is the same, in the same calm and quiet manner. If the one organization involved says this and another says that, focusing on different points, that creates a lot of doubt. So it's very important that the communication about what is the plan, how we're going to recover from this, is coordinated. Mm-hmm. No single business survives a tourism crisis alone. The entire destination ecosystem, they must respond together. If it's not together, if it's not aligned, if it's not well structured, it's not going to work.
Yeah, I want to dig a little deeper on issues of leadership. And you mm-hmm. you have pointed out to the reaction, leadership in the case of Dubai, providing clear guidance and, you know, taking steps to reassure travelers and to an extent of absorbing costs of delay. In your work with different businesses that are undergoing transformation and turnaround, what leadership qualities have you found to be most important in instances where organizations are facing shock to demand or are facing whatever other forms of crisis?
So I think one of those things is remain calm, right? We're getting much stronger, more resilient to crisis because it's happening more often, unfortunately. But it's very important to always remain calm. Don't react, respond to very different things. It will be seen as similar, but it's actually very different. Make sure you are very adaptable and agile. You know, make sure you can make those decisions once you've assessed them. Transparency, I think, is always key in everything we do in life and in business, but especially during moments of crisis, to be fully transparent with your teams, with your stakeholders, and things like that. This is where also strategic thinking becomes absolutely important. Not just quick decision making, but think strategically, think different, make sure you know, beyond panic. When we have this adrenaline rush, we can think of a lot of things, but this panic, it might not necessarily be the right thing. So think of that. And then obviously personal resilience. Great leaders do not remove uncertainty. You cannot. It's impossible. But when you guide through it by making the right decisions, that's what sets a great leader apart. You cannot change the situation, but how you deal with the situation is what makes the difference.
That's an absolute truth right there, that we may not change, you know, the situation, but how we deal with the situation becomes the real point of focus in moments of crisis.
Actually, I mean, same with the complaint. You know, in this industry, it's not going to be perfect. You can't please everyone. Complaints are going to be there. Things all go wrong. But how you deal with it makes somebody either come back, leave still a happy customer or guest in hotels or restaurants, or not.
So let's look at the implications for Africa's MICE and tourism ecosystem. So Africa has done a lot of work. Many destinations on the continent have worked real hard over the last couple of years to position the continent as a destination for international meetings, conferences, and business travel. We have seen real investments in expansion of, you know, airports, development of infrastructure for MICE, really strengthening the ecosystem for MICE and business travel. Now, how do global disruptions particularly in major aviation hubs, like what we have seen with Dubai, affect Africa's competitiveness in the MICE market?
So we, you know, Africa, we already have connectivity challenges. It's so to go from the east to the west, sometimes you have to actually leave the continent to get somewhere. So global aviation hubs are disrupted, you know, it becomes even more difficult. So what we need to do is look for new destinations beyond the traditional conference hubs. Look what's happening in Kigali. It's working really, really well. Cape Town. And let's not forget, we're at home. I might not be there right now, but Nairobi is still part of home. We've got so much opportunity. And with the developments that are happening at Bomas of Kenya at the moment, we will be able to bring events here that were never possible before. The same with Marrakesh, that it's really developing. So we need to look at different areas that then will be easier to reach. Even if there's a crisis, then there will be different routes that can be used. So that's one of the big things I think we can do. Because connectivity remains the single biggest factor for the African MICE competitiveness. If we can be reached easily and connect all these different dots on the map, then that will be the biggest win.
Do moments like this, moments of extreme pressure or moments of disruption, create strategic opportunities for emerging destinations like Africa? Are there opportunities that could arise out of this for Africa to attract new events or new investments?
Locations, you know, event locations during global uncertainty. We've seen it happening. Regional events are growing. Africa offers new markets and young business ecosystems. I mean, we becoming a hub. Africa has got the youngest population in the world. And we really leveraging that at the moment in a good and bad ways, unfortunately. But having those young business ecosystems, adaptability is really helps. Pan-African trade conferences, you shift them around the continent, but make it Africa-based. Technology summits, they're popping up everywhere, and it's really, really important. We need to bring them. Investment forums, they're happening more and more. Regional business meetings. 10 years ago, many of these events we spoke about now, they did not happen in Africa. But with Africa being this hub for things happening, and I really believe that the next 2 decades belong to Africa in so many different ways, in terms of technology, development, real estate, policy, so many different things that we now becoming that space. So that is more disruptions than any other places of the world. Just strengthens our position to become that powerhouse that we deserve to be.
Great. And
so
what do you think?
You know, with these disruptions, and with these disruptions, you know, like I said, these things have already been happening. These shifts are happening. We're getting more of the important big events from around the world. Look what's happening with the UN, bringing some of the headquarters to Nairobi. But these type of disruptions, they just accelerate these things and making it happen so much faster.
That's you know, sort of very encouraging that there is opportunity for the continent, even with, you know, these kinds of challenges. And what do you think African destinations ought to prioritize to build resilience and, you know, competitiveness within our MICE and tourism ecosystem?
So it's interesting, this question comes up here again as well, because I literally, Harriet, you know her very well as well, a renowned journalist for Africa, asked me these questions for the Tourism Update platform. And one of the big things is connectivity and cost of travel within Africa. So we need more direct air routes. We need open skies policies. We've been working on this for the last decade. Everybody is signed, almost everybody is signed, but execution is very different and still a big problem. Then we have to work on the infrastructure, convention centers. Some of these events are big, and there's a lot of destinations that just cannot accommodate the number of people. Then you get people that want a very big conference center, they don't have the hotel rooms, or vice versa. So we need that quality. We need quality hotels. And unfortunately, there's a lot of properties out there still that do not live up to the quality expectations for international travelers. So you might have the key count in a certain destination, but not the quality key count that you require. So we need to upgrade to the quality of products in many of the regions. Then obviously we need to look at the urban transport. Getting from A to B can be very challenging. We're doing great in Nairobi. We've got the expressway. It made a huge difference, and it's affecting the number of bookings, guaranteed. People were avoiding Nairobi just because of the two-hour commute from the airport or to town. Now they say, no issue, 20 minutes, I'm there. So very important. Visa reform is still very important. The easier it gets to get into a country. And I know a lot of countries are working on this, but it's really, really slow still. Right, but easy entry for delegates brings more business. It's for leisure, for business travel, and especially for MICE. It's important. If you get a lot of people from across the globe, the easier the access is, the better. And I'm talking access in terms of visas here. Let's look at regional visa systems. We've done the East Africa visa. It's working really well. The GCC have just introduced something similar this year. That is something that can make it easier. Now, depending on what type of event, because MICE is big sporting events as well. Next year, we've got AFCON, which is going to be hosted between Tanzania, Kenya, and Uganda. And for the people to now, they can attend three different country matches with one visa, where, otherwise it would have been very challenging. So those things work really well. And then obviously product development in terms of strong leisure experiences. You don't want people just to come for the conference. You want to showcase what you've got around it. You need to get the quality products that fit with that conference. So Africa must compete not just on price, but on accessibility and experience as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Barry. I want to recenter this conversation on the issue of leadership. This podcast series is Adapt Leadership in Crisis. Looking ahead, global disruptions will continue to be a reality in the coming decade. We don't know whether they are, health, pandemic, or, war, or, threats of war, conflict. Whatever form or shape they may take, it is certain that global disruptions will remain a reality. So what leadership mindset will be the most important for those that are shaping the future of hospitality, tourism, and meetings? What will be the mindset for leaders that will be very critical? And I'm thinking particularly for leaders in, public service, but also the private sector. What mindset do we need to adopt going forward?
I think one of the main things is, like you already said, global disruptions will become normal. Like whether it's health, whether it's war, whether it's economic, we need to understand this is becoming part of the norm. We need to embrace adaptability. A good leader will be able to say, okay, right, this has happened. This is what we're going to do in a calm manner, as we already said. Strong tourism ecosystems require collaboration. So a great leader needs to be able to collaborate, not just be stubborn in my way or the highway. Work together. Listen to other people's opinions and thoughts. And then obviously innovation, sustainability, and regional travel will shape the future. So those are all very important to take into your leadership style. Remain calm, be adaptable, collaborate, work, create partnerships, and keep on innovating, be sustainable. And we all know sustainability is more than just being eco-friendly. So yes, so destinations, companies that succeed will be the ones that adapt quickly. And while they continue to invest in their long-term vision company during the times of crisis.
Great, great conversation. What is very interesting, Barry, is that this global crisis came right on the back of the Global Tourism Resilience Conference hosted in Nairobi. And there was the Nairobi Declaration on Resilience and Drivers of Resilience for the industry. And I think it is an immediate test on how resilient are we as an industry. So in one sentence, Barry, what does resilience in the global hospitality and meetings industry really mean?
So I believe that resilience in hospitality means the ability to absorb shock, adapt quickly, and continue creating value for the travelers, communities, and investors through also using clear and honest communication.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Barry. A lot of insightful gems coming out of this conversation today. I want to thank you for your time, and we look forward to continued conversations. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey. Thanks for having me and the conversation as always.
Great.